Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Refractive Thinker Radio Show, hosted by the award-winning and international best-selling author Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur. Meet the scholars of the award-winning doctoral anthology series, The Refractive Thinker, where we focus on getting doctoral research off the coffee table and into the hands of business owners who can benefit from the results. Join us each Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time for 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio designed to discuss emerging topics in higher education and business. We will meet today's industry thought leaders and college professors leading the way. Details can be found at www.refractivethinker.com. Now, here's your host, Dr. Cheryl Lentz.
Good morning, Albuquerque and everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Lentz. Happy Tuesday morning, Balloon Fiesta, October 4th, 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Welcome to another thought-provoking 30 minutes. We appreciate you coming to stay with us and visit every week with us as we offer you things to think about, things to make you go, And this week, we have an interesting topic that's in the wind, as I like to say, is what is everybody talking about? And the idea is this idea of fragmentation or silos. Think about this idea of leadership being more than simply your immediacy of your team, your company. When we use this called a stakeholder approach, we look at everyone who has a stake in the outcome to be able to look at how decisions may impact them. But the challenge often becomes is this idea of silos, is that particularly companies that might have five different divisions, maybe headquarters is located in one part of the country and they have different properties or headquarters or store locations or things in other parts. And so the companies like to believe that if they have a policy in Florida, that policy for the same company in Seattle is still in play. And I wonder about that because I've worked for many companies, whether it's a retail company, a hotel company, an educational company, institution, however you define them. It's very interesting because things are very, very fragmented. And what we need to do is to have much more of a servant leadership approach. And a servant leadership approach is the bottom up instead of the top down. And so the idea is, whether or not you're seeing your company the way your company, your customer sees your company and you. And so I have this book that I wrote years and years ago. It was my very first book called Journey Outside the Golden Palace. And the Golden Palace is really that metaphor as well as literal boundaries of your office. I once had a place I worked for, and I will keep their name private, that I had a supervisor who lived right outside my office, maybe 15 feet. And I was always surprised that he wouldn't just come over to my office and ask me something. Instead, he hired an external consultant to come into the organization to ask us what he could have walked 10 feet across the office space to sit down and ask me what I thought. And I was always surprised, and I hear this from my students and my clients all the time, going, well, why can't they just ask me? I'd be happy to share with them because, after all, isn't the reason that the reason why we were hired? The idea is whether you're a frontline employee, the first touch point that a customer has with your business, whether it's the front door greeter at Walmart, whether it's the hello, my name is at the call center, whether it's the doorman at, you know, a top hotel, that's when the customer experience begins. And so these people in whatever position your company or you have hired them, to include yourself, offers a level of expertise. You hired them because to be an expert, whatever, in their job description. And I always was amazed by a wonderful general manager I had once in my career that was very humble and very into that. Well, who knows more about being a doorman than a doorman? And I'm like, rock on, absolutely. Because I'm not a fan of somebody looking over my shoulder, constantly micromanaging me. And I once remember very early in my career making a bit of a snarky remark to one of my bosses, thinking, if you don't like how I do my job, you should replace me. Or you should help train me so that I can do it the way that meets your expectations. And so this idea of silos, of being in our own little fiefdom, our own little palace with our palace guards. I know many people, the gatekeeper is the personal assistant, the secretary, the person who sits outside the office, depending on what the term may be. But it's the, I have these minions that surround me, and because I am in leadership or I am in senior management or I am in a position of authority above the frontline employees, however you entitle that, somehow I can't mingle. And it always reminded me of the king, you know, posting something to the butt of a tree, being able to say, hear ye, hear you, here's what I expect, I'm going to put to a tree, and then rides away on a white horse. And the whole idea is, can't you come talk to us? We are not peons, we are not peasants, we are not the servants in the kingdom that serve you. And the enlightened leader, the servant leader, is going to realize that the leader serves the team. The leader is not served by the team. And so we as servant leaders would, out of respect for their position, out of respect for their expertise, we would include their input as part of any decisions that, yes, a boss, a supervisor, a board of directors, a member of the C-suite, a insert title has one person that they are responsible for, you've lost the right to think for yourself. And so that's where these silos come up. And if I were sitting in front of you, as I do in some of my keynote speaking around the globe, it's a matter of, let me show you what you need to do. You need to get up out of your chair. You need to get out of your office. Get out of the palace. Get behind the walls. Get behind the absolute minions that protect you, whether they're palace guards, whether they are security folks, whatever it is that you have in this insulating circle of around you. Follow what Herb Kelleher has done, that walk around management. Herb Kelleher didn't lead from his office, didn't lead from a chair, didn't lead from behind a desk. He went out to the troops. I was always impressed when I travel in Southwest Airlines, because I try to exclusively, as I read their in-state magazine, to look at how they brag about and boast about their experiences that their customers will write in. These are not people who are sitting behind the desk. Herb Kelleher would be slinging bags with the ramp people, would be, you know, behind the counter doing with the reservation people, would be on a plane serving drinks with the. He knew everyone and had either the most incredible memory or the most incredible system that would prepare him for remembering people's names, their kids, their important things, to have that genuine interest. And so I'm always amazed that we're looking at the opportunity to have the ability to connect with people, to look at the opportunity of getting out from behind that desk, walking 10 feet across to the other office, and going in and just asking your people what they think. What does this actually accomplish? Well, first of all, there's the ability of people taking a genuine interest. You're a human being, the ability to connect with another human being. And so if you're about to make a decision, don't sit there and think that you have all the answers. You may have the authority, you may have the power, you may have the responsibility, but that doesn't mean you have the knowledge. And so the idea is, go ask your people. Again, that my general manager was amazing. He said, a 30-year doorman knows a heck of a lot more about being a doorman than I do as being a doorman, even as the general manager who has been promoted how many times, and he was the darling of the company. But he led by example, and he always made everyone who was standing in front of him feel as if they were the most important person in the world. They didn't have a secretary or a personal messenger or the avant-garde or the gatekeeper run an errand or run a message. He did his own bidding. And you know what it was like to be able to have the man, the GM, the top dog come in and actually know who I was, to ask me a question and, wait for it, waited for the answer. I thought it was absolutely amazing, and I've always remembered that, because we always get separated, we get distanced by these layers of bureaucracy. And so the idea is, how do you practice leadership that serves your business? Most people have a struggle with the fact that they have a very specific mindset of what they're going to do, consequences of potentially their action. And so we look at the ideas like, sure, you can be an authoritarian leader. You can be a dictator. You can tell them how it's going to be. And then you really are going to wonder why you don't have camaraderie, why people don't trust you, why you aren't their go-to person, why people may even be quitting. Oftentimes you don't quit the company, you quit your boss. Why? Because of this arrogance, this separation, this distance, this thinking that somehow you've got the corner office behind the window. And even if you have an open door policy, I know an awful lot of folks who wouldn't dare go through that door because it's fictional. They're not going to have repercussions. They don't want to sit in your office. They don't like you. They don't want to be around you. You aren't serving their needs. And that's where these silos come in, these little fiefdoms, these little power-happy little deals where everyone thinks that they have to keep the keys to the kingdom themselves. And that's not it. We have to journey outside of this golden palace to get out of the office. And maybe the office is for having meetings. Maybe the office is to do paperwork. But I know after living in Las Vegas for 12 years, more business happened on the golf course and at the pool than it ever did inside the boardroom with those mahogany chairs and desks and that intimidating heavy wood furniture. Why is this something that's going to be a surprise to people? I did an experiment with one of my students who was not the, how can I say, touchy-feely kind of guy. And I remember it was an undergraduate class years and years ago. And he's like, all right, Doxy, I've got an open mind. I'm going to try this touchy-feely stuff you're talking about. And so what he did was it would have been a secretary, I think, at the time. Now we might call them a personal assistant, et cetera, et cetera. But it was all he did is Monday morning, he went in and talked with her about 20 minutes. And we'd call it chit-chat, shooting the bull, nothing that had anything to do with work other than, hi, how are you? What'd you do this weekend? On Friday, they had the same type of chit-chat. Hey, what do you got going for this weekend? How do you, you know, what do you see going on? What's new and exciting kind of a thing? And it was out of his comfort zone. He was a military man with a very task-oriented, bing, 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 here's what we got to get done, we get done. He wasn't about the relationship management. He wasn't about taking interest. But something changed. About a week into this, he comes to class, and he's got this really puzzled look on his face. And I'm like, all right, out with it, my friend. He's like, well, you know what, Doxy, I've tried your thing. And I turned off my computers, I turned off all my phone, and I focused all my attention on my assistant. And nothing to do with work at all. I asked her about her cat or her dog, or she had some kind of an animal, I know. And just things that he had to do everything to keep his composure, because chit-chat's not this guy's strong point. He is not a social animal of any kind. He is a very authoritarian. And so he tried the taking an interest. And within a week and a half, things began to shift. Simply by taking an interest in her, their relationship improved. Her productivity improved. Her attitude improved. And he did nothing related to the job, because he was very clear to be able to try, you know, very objective variables to make sure that we knew what was working here. And he was amazed. He goes, Doc said, Doxy, you blew me away. He goes, it's amazing how the leadership is really in the small things, the little things. And I will tell you, having a doctorate in leadership, the answer is yes, absolutely. I was actually a little bit disappointed in doctor school, if you want to look at it that way. I thought it would be more complex, more intense, more complicated theories. What I learned is names and labels for things we were taught as a child and how to play nice in the sandbox. You don't take someone else's toys. You don't take credit for someone else's work. You share. It's collaborative, not combative. It's cooperative, not competitive. And he didn't even go to that extreme. All he did was say hello and take a personal interest and see her. And I thought it just made me smile. And he's like, all right, Doxy. I had him from that point forward, the rest of the class. He goes, all right, what else you got? Which essentially was, he goes, this worked. I want to see what the rest of it did. And this was only a 9-week leadership class. So I spent 4.5 years studying this stuff. We only spent 9 months, but it was enough to get a quick win that he did nothing more but focus on his social skills, his genuinely interested in another human being. We were talking about this in one of my classes last night, because the challenge was, is I remember that idea of communication, the idea of clarity of communication, and not just, you know, in the United States, I'll give you a great example. We will typically have a, hi, how are you? We don't really care how you are. It's a political nicety. It's a cultural expectation. And most people walk away before they even either say the answer or hear the answer. This was different when I was in Japan. when I was in Japan, in a culture who thinks of English as the language of business, and everyone learns English usually in 7th or 8th grade as part of the curriculum, because I taught in the Japanese school system for a short time, and most people in the business will take English-speaking, native English-speaking classes because they want to perfect their class. So long and short of it, they, whenever we would use, you know, most time you learn language, hi, my name is, hi, how are you, I am, etc. Well, the Japanese took it to heart. I had to retrain myself. When somebody asked how I was, they actually cared. They actually stood around and listened. They had a genuine, well, that's nice, you've had a good thing, and it's so wonderful to talk to you. It wasn't politeness. It wasn't a cultural nicety. They stood in front of me, eye contact, and made sure that I was their entire world. And I was so shocked by that that I had to change my behavior, because we in the United States, I know people that say, yeah, yeah, I'm fine, and they walk out the door. Hi, how are you? Yeah, whatever, I'm fine, whatever. I used to, in my career, use a different word simply out of seeing who was paying attention. I would say things like, oh, I'm just peachy, or I'm just ducky, because it would backtrack the VCR, the tape player, the recording device they had in their head, going, oh, you said something different out of the norm that I heard you. And that's the whole point here. There's a great book by Robert Fulcrum, Everything I Needed to Know in Life I Learned in Kindergarten. Much the same way a lot of my tips in the Journey Outside the Golden Palace are simple things we already know how to do. Simply taking an interest in someone. Looking at the fact that holding all the keys to the kingdom and trying to make yourself valuable so that you are going to have job security backfires. If you're the only one that knows your job, guess what? You're never going to be promoted. You're never going to get out of for vacation or get time off or sick time or anything, because you're the only one that knows. The company can't live without you. Therefore, you, by design, have created your own downfall by keeping yourself where you are. The exact opposite is being able to share the ability of what you do so that it's not a mystery. Cross-training. A good friend of mine has a phenomenal approach. She uses a red, I think it's a red three-ring notebook she keeps, so that if somebody has gone for the day out in a conference, out on vacation, out in an emergency, out on maternity leave, paternity leave, whatever it may be, somebody knows what to do in their absence. They spent years crafting these. Here's what I do for a living. And we know that we are far more than our job descriptions, as that most jobs will evolve well beyond whatever we were hired to do. And so they have a here's what I do. Here's who I call. Here are my contacts. Here are the resources. Here are what I do in this. If you have a rhythm, for example, think accountants, that they have a certain rhythm of doing taxes during tax season and certain other things in there. And that if somebody wasn't there, you would have a to-do list, a checklist, a here's what I do, textbook binder of my job. And so think about how that looks as a leadership. Now, no one has to mind read what you do. Something happens that might be out of the ordinary, perhaps, and we can troubleshoot. But by sitting in someone else's position, it's no longer a mystery. It's something that you are getting out of your office, you're getting out of your golden palace, you're getting out of your boundaries, and you're going in there and meeting the troops, meeting the folks. This is why I encourage all of my students. It's like, go to that company Christmas party. Go to the sponsored event at the football game and go tailgate. And most of them, they just roll their eyes, and I can just hear the sighing. I'm going, it's not about you. And now I've got their attention. They're like, what do you mean it's not about me? Do you realize that the whole idea of networking is not about you? It's about relationship building. So that on Monday morning, if you need a favor, you're going to probably hit the guy up you met at happy hour on Friday or at the pie-eating contest at the company picnic, or you went to a baseball game together or something. Now you know them. There's a personal space. There's a relationship. And guess what? We are human beings. We like to be around people we like. And so as long as you're not the one who's wearing the lampshade on their head and you're not embarrassing yourself by inappropriate behavior, drinking, et cetera, say at the company Christmas party, we all hear their stories, that you're simply being around, that you use this strategically. If you don't like social events, then don't go for the whole party. Just go for the few minutes. Go for a half an hour. Go what I call FaceTime. My boss used to teach me that. Go in and show your face around the company. Shake a few hands. Put a few smiles. You'll be amazed on how spending, even if it's just a half an hour, how that'll shift things in the office. And so when you need a favor, when you're struggling with something, people might be apt to help you because you're more than that person who lives in cubicle 417 or office 212 down the hall. You're a real human being, and you have kids, and you have dogs, and you have you know, things that happen, and occasionally bad news happen to you. You know, somebody dies, somebody's sick, somebody has an interest in you, and now you're more than just a face. You're a person. And think of my student who all he did, about 20 minutes at the beginning of the week, 20 minutes at the end of the week, he said hello. He extended an olive branch of being able to say, hi, so how are you? And initially, you know, his personal assistant thought he'd lost his mind because she'd never seen this behavior before. But in time, she grew to understand it and relish it in the fact that somebody was taking an interest in her, a personal interest. And eventually, it turned into a bit of a mentoring. And when she had questions, she was no longer afraid to approach him because of his authoritarian demeanor. And so when you think of these golden palace boundaries, many of them we create for ourselves. It's risky, I will give you that, because when we put ourselves out there, we do make ourselves vulnerable. We open ourselves to criticism. We open ourselves to, we could be wrong. People might not like us, and it's okay. You know, very few people have the everyone in the world likes them, and that's perfectly acceptable. We don't have to like everybody we work with. We simply have to respect them. We don't have to be disagreeable to disagree. Things that are often ignored in the office place is, how do you deal with that personal relationship? How do you deal with that conflict management? How do you deal with negotiation? How do you deal with somebody just saying hello? I remember a company I worked for that I always remembered. I think we called her a receptionist. I knew her name. I knew what her schedule was. I made sure that I clocked in and clocked out, meaning I always told her when I was in the office and when I wasn't in the office. And guess what? I was one of the few people who ever did that. I noticed her. She wasn't invisible. And my messages always got through. I remembered her on Secretary's Day. I would just say good morning to her. When I travel, I will make a point of saying hello to the maid, saying hello to the janitor, saying hello to the engineer, sometimes trying to remember their names. I'd even write them down. Why? They're part of the team. That was so annoying with my boss, that one scenario. He wouldn't walk 10 feet across because I was not in management. I was one of the peons. I'm not sure he ever really knew my name because I was so far beneath him. And it was so upsetting going, really? I've worked here 3 years. You can't even at least say hello and know my name. I'm in your team. But because he would talk to my boss and my boss would talk to me, that's how he thought authority worked. I was never more insulted. He angered and torqued people beyond words because he simply couldn't see them outside of being invisible. He was the king. He was within his golden palace. And we knew better than to approach him. And then he wondered why at the end of the surveys he got the worst scores, going, he was a jerk. He treated people, he looked down at them, he was condescending to them, he wouldn't come out of his office. Again, he hired external consultants when he could have walked 10 feet to my door. I knew all of the policies he was about to create, they were going to fail. Why? I knew my job. That's what I was hired to do. If he would have just asked me, we could have worked with another opportunity. I told my boss. I don't know if my boss ever told him. He said he did. But the policies didn't change until the customers complained. We, who were behind the desk and behind the scenes and were doing our thing, we knew. Why? Because we did that job every day. We knew our customers. We knew what they were going to say. Many of them I had to kind of assuage their hurt feelings because some of the policies were downright rude. But in his mind, they make sense to him because he thought the world worked for him because he was the boss and he was some kind of senior manager. And I always remembered, and I tell this to my students and I will share with you, is watch the people around you. Watch what they do, because we typically find what we don't like first. We often remember the bosses who were not good leaders. I, for the long time, even when that book came out, always made the snarky comment in my head was, did you go to leadership school? Were you there they taught leadership? Because I would see all the fancy degrees in his office. And I would wonder going, shouldn't you know this? But the challenge became is the ability to know. Oops, sorry, we had a little bit of a technical issue, that the ability to know that I was human, the ability to know that I had answers because I did the job all day. You know, he worked from 9 to 5. I typically worked second shift, sometimes didn't get off till 11 o'clock, and I had various jobs like that. And it was just a get to know your people, and here's some of what the research offers. The research offers that when people are part of the process, the buy-in is higher, even if the answer is no. Now, isn't that amazing research? You can go back and look at Daft and others that have done this in there. Why might that be? It's because they only wanted to have their voices heard. They only wanted to become part of the process. They only wanted to know what was going on. And so we're looking at that transparency of leadership, the ability to be able to say, let me not only tell you what I decided, but why. And my team, when I learned this, because I was pretty early in my career when I started in leadership, you know, you graduate with your undergraduate degree, and I was really disappointed, and you'll read that in the book, of how many people I expected to be teaching me, and unfortunately, I seemed to know more than them. Now, back then, I didn't have all of the names and labels that I do now, having a degree in leadership, but it was a, really, you can't just be nice to me? You can't say hello? You can't learn my name? You can't involve me when there's a decision that involves me that I might be asked instead of told? I might have some opinions that might be valuable. And oh, guess what? When you involve me in the process, I won't be resentful. Even if it goes against me, I'll understand because you're going to help explain it to me. You're going to include me. You're going to have me part of the in crowd. And so I look at some of that going, again, many people have very fancy degrees, but I wonder if they understand the application of leadership. You might be able to define it. There's over 65 different definitions of leadership. But the question is, can you use it? Impact your life? Do you share these things such as servant leadership and authentic leadership and transparency of leadership and transformational leadership? Or are you really the transactional? All I could do is to pay a job and move widget A to widget B, and that's all it is. I don't talk to anybody. I mind my own business, and that's that. And then they wonder why I have a hard time doing their job. And remember, if we look at the words of John Maxwell, it's the idea of lead from where you are. You don't have to have a title. You just have to have the ability, if one other person in the world is going to follow you, then you're a leader. And the question I always have with my students when they share situations, well, this happened and that happened, and I ask them, and what did you do about it? And they look at me with that deer in the headlights. What do you mean, what did I do with it? I'm not the boss. And I said, okay, are you going to settle for having a poor leader as a boss, or let's call them a manager? Or are you going to help see what you can do because you can lead from where you are? And if you can't lead from where you are in the smaller position, how is anyone ever going to trust you when the big stuff comes along? You have to test yourself. You have to experiment. You have to use this. That's why I put my students in a position of leadership as much as I can, going, the goal is not to learn what I teach in my class. To learn it, the goal is to apply what I've taught in my classes so that you can learn something in class today and you can go tomorrow and you can look at. Sometimes I'll have my students just go observe for the day. Have a cup of coffee and just listen. Go watch. Tell me the kinds of leaders you follow. Tell me why you follow them. Tell me why you would do something than what they did. Because we're often very quick to criticize. And I used to allow my team members the ability to whine, but only to whine for about 5 minutes, going, all right, sometimes you need to vent. Sometimes you need to share your feelings. I get that. But then you need to stop and you need to have a solution. And that's what all of these ideas are behind living in a golden palace. Many people think that once they're promoted, it's suddenly an I versus them. I'm in management now. Yeah? And guess what? Once you've been promoted, you have the privilege of serving others, not to be served by them. You've lost the right to think of only yourself. And so as we bring another show to a close this week, thank you for joining us. And start thinking about how you create a golden palace around you. What are the boundaries that you keep? Who are the gatekeepers? How do you go out and just meet the troops? Literally get up out of your chair, out of the office, and go shake some hands, go share some smiles, and see how that changes your world. Because the idea is to learn how to use leadership seriously to serve those around you, to be able to affect positive change. And lead by example. Your staff is going to follow everything you do, good, bad, or the ugly. So, again, please, you'll see the link that's on the website of the book, Journey Outside the Golden Palace. That's the goal, is to be able to open the gates, dismiss the gatekeepers, and have that open sense of walk-around management like Herb Kelleher, like Tony Hsieh, like of Zappos, of other companies around the globe who understand the importance of leading from where you are, being involved, having a genuine issue, an interest in those who work for your team, and how simple some of these leadership techniques can be. So I want to thank you for joining us every Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Happy Balloon Fiesta from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I hope you're here in town and watching all the wonderful balloons that will go up and to be able to see the connection that we have with the world. Thank you for joining us again, and we'll see you next week for another thought-provoking radio, Blog Talk Radio, Refractive Thinker Style. I'm Dr. Cheryl Lentz, known as the Academic Entrepreneur. Thanks for joining us. Keep thinking your way to success.